Frank Foster, Cincinnati jazz icon. Saxophonist, composer, arranger, band leader, and educator. A man who loved jazz and shared this love with so many. I'm your host, Lee Hay. Frank Foster was a Cincinnati native who loved jazz from the time he was a young man to the day he passed away this past summer in Virginia. He was born on September 23, 1928 in Cincinnati and fell in love with big bands as a teenager. Mr. Foster played in a dance band at Wilberforce University, which led to a gig with the Count Basie Orchestra in 1953. An accomplished musician, he took over leadership of the Basie Band from Thad Jones in 1986 and won two Grammys during his tenure. During this hour, you'll hear from some of his friends and fellow musicians. Juanita and Philip Paul live in Cincinnati and knew Frank Foster for many years. Lynn Seaton, who played with the Blue Wisp Big Band in the early 80s, also played in the Basie Band with Frank Foster. Jazz vocalist Diane Schur worked with Frank Foster and the Count Basie Orchestra on a Grammy Award-winning jazz album. John Brown from Duke University, where Mr. Foster's archives were donated, was a friend and fellow musician. Brian Grady is working on a film of his life. And Fran Robinson talks about Central State University's plans to honor Frank Foster during their homecoming weekend in October. Philip Paul was not only the house drummer at King Records, but also played with Tiny Bradshaw's Swing Orchestra.
I got here in 1951. Frank had left then, but I worked with Woody Evans Trio, and Woody Evans and Frank were very close. I worked with Woody about 25 years, and we did several concerts with Frank, several schools, Walnut Hills, and we did one concert that's very memorable at Memorial Hall. He debuted a song called Cecilia, and that's his wife's name. And he wrote this song for her, and we had a rehearsal, of course, and we played that several times during the night, and it's very enjoyable, a beautiful song. I'm from New York, and I've heard a lot of musicians. Charlie Parker, I heard Sonny Rollins, all those guys, but Frank Foster equaled them. He was a superb musician. I was shocked when I came to Cincinnati and found out that Frank was a native here because he was so knowledgeable about the instrument and about music and so compassionate about his music, you know. He was one of those rare individuals that really appreciated music. It was like number one in his life, and it showed in his playing. He was a star soloist. Mm-hmm. I have to remind people how good a musician Frank really was. He was close to being a perfect musician. Right. He played tenor sax, he played soprano. I'm pretty sure he played alto too, but his favorite instruments were tenor saxophone and mm-hmm. soprano saxophone. He played in a band with Elvin Jones, the drummer. Unbelievable. I don't know how Frank fit in there, but he found a way to star in that band. He was incredible.
That was his brother-in-law, too, the Jones.
Yeah.
Joneses. They were his Frank's brothers-in-law.
Yeah, the Jones brothers, you know, mm-hmm. the Thad Jones and Elvin. He wrote numerous songs. One in particular, I'll let Juanita talk about that because it's closest to her, but he wrote so many tunes. Every time we would go back home to New York to visit, we would run into Frank. He always had a big band who was playing somewhere, and we made it a point to go and see him. I remember one time at Small's when we walked in, Small's Paradise up in Harlem, and he had a wonderful band, and he was playing, and he came in right away, and he identified Juanita with Shiny Stockers right away. I'm still not going to say anything. I'm going to let her talk about that.
Well, I knew Frank from the school. I went to Holy Trinity on 5th and Mound Street. Lots of the young musicians, they would play at the Cotton Club, which was right at 6th and Mound also. He played in one of the bands around here. I understand he was 14 when he started playing. He was with one of the bands playing at the Cotton Club, and he worked a lot there. I think he was from Walnut Hills. I think his mother was a school teacher, and I know he went to Walnut Hills High School, but Frank was a wonderful person. He was friendly. He was just a perfect musician. He wasn't a smarty or nothing like that, just Frank. You know, so that was back in 40, around about 47 or 50, somewhere around there. I was a line dancer. I wasn't a person that was a special attraction at the Cotton Club. And I also danced at the Roosevelt Theater in Cincinnati. That was with the Whitman Sisters and also Brown Skin Models. I did a little dancing for them, but it didn't go anywhere for me because I thought I could go to New York, and when I got there, it wasn't happening. So when we got to New York, he was glad to see us, and he just grabbed me and hugged me, and he said, you know, I wrote that song for you, but Ella wrote the words.
Those silk shiny stockings that I wear when I'm with you, I wear 'cause you told me that you dig that crazy hue. Do we think of romance when we go to a dance? Oh no, you take a glance at those shiny stockings, then came along some chick with great big stockings too. When you changed your mind about me, why, I never knew. I guess I'll have to find a new kind, a guy drunk some chick with great big stockings too. When you changed your mind about me, why, I never knew. I guess I'll have to find a new kind, a guy who digs my shiny stockings too.
I used to wear shiny stockings all the time. There was a store on 6th Street that sold these stockings, and I would wear them every day. And I had no idea that it would make somebody remember about them.
Oh.
And so he wrote that song, and he told me when we went to New York that I was the one that influenced him to write the song. I love that song. That is the favorite one.
I think he injected a lot more musicianship in the players. Oh, he was a player. He wasn't just a guy stand up in front of the band and wave a wand. He didn't do that. He had his horn in his hand. He would play every solo if he could, you know. And he was just, as we call guys like that in the business, he was a monster. No doubt about it. Now, you know, after he got traveling on the road, he would come in here to see his mother. But
yeah, his mother was
yeah.
here. She was a lovely lady.
Yeah. I remember one time we came in, and we was at his mother's house, and it was a joyous event, you know, because it's a loving family.
He still has relatives here.
I like to just offer my deepest condolences to her upon Frank's death.
He's the boss. Now that he's the leader of the Basie band, bet you're really gonna love the Basie band, spreading happiness and joy throughout the land. You get him swinging on down the block, syncopating on that 1 o'clock. Jump, mister. That's the way it happens. Stomping, burning, bashing, smashing. Stand
Sweden. I met Frank Foster in 1986 when he succeeded Thad Jones as the leader of the Count Basie Orchestra. I was a member of the orchestra starting in 1985 through 1987. He was very dynamic. He led through great example. He was a powerful saxophonist and one of the greatest writers that this music has ever known. He was very joyful to be around, very jubilant. On the bandstand, he had a commanding presence of joy. I mean, it was really great. He would inspire us through his playing and, of course, his amazing writing. He continued to write charts all the way to the end, I know, but he wrote many new things while we were on the band. An incredible experience to be around him, to travel with him, to share meals with him, to ride the bus with him for hours on end. Because we were out full-time in those days. I mean, like 45 weeks a year we were traveling together. We traveled a great deal to Europe and Japan, backed up several great artists, Nancy Wilson, Tony Bennett, Diane Schur. We recorded that CD with Diane Schur, Joe Williams. It was an amazing time.
My baby upsets me. I am full of misery. My baby upsets me. I am full of misery. Feel bad when I'm around her, and worse when she's away from me. My baby's confused me. She is cool enough to freeze. My baby's confused me. She is cool enough to freeze. But as soon as I get mad, she knows just how to please. My baby's a pixie. She makes me play it cool. The girl is a pixie, and she makes me play it cool. She says, remember, Big Daddy, I am your friend and not your fool. I tell her I love her. Her eyes against the wall. I tell her I hate her, then she goes straight home. The girl is a pixie. I don't know what to do. I have to sing about this girl. Tell all my troubles to you. She's a pixie, she's a pixie, she's a pixie. Pixie, I said she's a pixie. She makes me play it cool. Girl is a pixie. She keeps me on my toes, makes me play it cool. She said, remember, Big Daddy, I'm your friend and not your fool. When I tell her that I love her, her eye begins to roam. And I say, well, go ahead, girl, forget it. She makes a beeline home. The girl is a pixie. And she's as sweet as she can be, babe. I can't do with or without her. I guess there ain't no hope. for me. The woman upsets me, upsets me, she upsets me, she upsets me. Yes, sir. The girl upsets me.
He was a great person. He was very helpful. Actually, his wife, Cecilia, gave my wife, Mariana, her first job when we moved to New York. So they were just spectacular people. I miss Frank Foster a lot. Just thinking about him makes me smile. Amazing what he has contributed to this music and to the Count Basie Orchestra and to his own things with the Living Color and the Loud Minority Band. Stuff he did with Frank West, two Franks, stuff he did with Elvin Jones, incredible stuff. So I'm very, very thankful that I had Frank Foster in my life. Will continue to impact me, I'm certain, the rest of my life, you know.
The shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has back teeth, dear, and he keeps it way out of sight. When that shark bites, his teeth, dear, scarlet billows, they begin to spread. Fancy white gloves, though, has MacHeath, dear. So there's barely never one trace of red. Oozing light, someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone perhaps perchance be Mac the Knife? From a tugboat on the river going slow, a cement bag, it is dropping down. Yeah, the cement is just for the weight, dear. You can make a large bet MacHeath is back in town. My man Louis Miller, he split the scene, babe, after drawing out all the breath from his stash. Just like a pimp, babe. Do you suppose that our boy, he did something rash? Ah, old Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, Bobby Darin, they did this song nice, Lady Ella too. They all sang it with so much feeling. That old Blue Eye, he ain't gonna add nothing new. But with Quincy's big band right behind me, swinging hard jack, I know I can't lose. When I tell you all about Mac the Knife, babe, it's an offer George Benson, we got Newman Foster, we got the Brecker Brothers, and Hampton's bringing up the rear. All these bad cats and more are in the band now. They make the greatest sounds you ever gonna hear. Hey, Suki Tawdry,
Jenny Diver, Holly Peachum, oh, Miss Lulu Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right here. Now that Mackie, I mean that man Mackie, yeah, he's bad. Mercy, mercy, yeah.
I'm Diane Shore, and of course, as most of you know, I'm a jazz vocalist. I've been on the scene for a lot of years. I started out in the early days, like 1975, I appeared at the Monterey Jazz Festival with Ed Shaughnessy and his big band Energy Force. I've done a lot of big band work with a lot of different people, including Frank Foster, who I worked with the first time back in 87. Toured all over Japan with Frank Foster and the Count Basie Orchestra, which was a lot of fun. And, of course, I proceeded to do an album with Diane Shore and the Count Basie Orchestra, which, of course, won a Grammy. The recording sessions, we were actually supposed to record in Japan, and a bunch of us came down with food poisoning. So the album was actually recorded at the record plant in Los Angeles in late February of 1987, I believe it was. It was a wonderful session. It took one night. Actually, though, I've got a funny story about the what happened as far as the food poisoning bit. Frank Foster was in the room at the time that they were going to give me a shot, and here I am in one of the little cities in Japan, and they couldn't find a vein. And so they finally administered the shot in the posterior area, and Frank chuckled and said, well, Deeds, you'd make a sad junkie, because they couldn't find a vein. Pretty funny. But at any rate, the session at the record plant went very well. There were quite a few people at that session, and it was, of course, made into a video. And then I came back to one of the studios in Los Angeles and did a few added things after the recording session.
I got a brand new man. Yes, I'm feeling mighty lucky. I got a brand new man. I'm telling you, he loves me like nobody can. Well, I met him on the corner. It was pouring rain. Yes, I met him on the corner. It was pouring. Tell me what's your name.
One of the things that was so special is the fact that Frank did such a great solo on that arrangement. It was just fabulous. I mean, the whole arrangement was really done with a lot of gusto and enthusiasm and lots of, of course, lots of swing. That particular track was really a lot of fun, really neat interaction between all of us players. It was really a lot of fun to do.
If you really want it, you can have the music all night long. Tell the drummer that you like his playing. Tell the singer if you like the song. I don't know a lot about technology today, but I know how to swing it when the band begins to play. Come on, baby, don't you feel like dancing? When you hear Count Basie call, if you like the music, you can have it. You can have it any time at all. I think it was in the mid-90s that I did a gig with Frank Foster in tribute to Frank Foster in Harlem with the Count Basie Orchestra. Bill Cosby, I think, was the host of that. I think that was the last time I actually worked directly with him, and I miss him a lot.
My name is John Brown. I'm a bass player, and I currently direct the jazz program at Duke University. I have had the pleasure of performing with many great artists in my time. In addition to Frank Foster, I've performed with people like Elvin Jones and the Marsalis family, Nina Freelon, Curtis Fuller, Slide Hampton, Nicholas Payton, Cyrus Chestnut. There's a great long list of people who I've played with in all places of the world. It's been a real joy to share in this music. Frank Foster is a gem of a human being. He was one of the warmest, kindest, and most sincere people I've ever met. To say that people loved him is to barely scratch the surface of what those relationships are really like. It's an unfortunate situation to realize it when people are sick and, you know, you hear that their prognosis is not good. But in the last few months within the music community, we've all been talking about how he's been doing. And you hear nothing but love when you hear people talk about him, and nothing but sincere, genuine compassion for a man who really only gave that to people. I first met Frank in the mid-90s. I've always lived in North Carolina, but was still living here then, and he was brought in to do a concert, and instead of bringing his whole band, the presenter just brought him and asked me to put a band together for him. So we met then and had the first opportunity to play and share some time together then. And he was just the kind of person that would always laugh and always carrying on. Even to the last time I saw him when he was in intensive care in the hospital, it was just his spirit was unaltered. And even though his body was failing him, his personality and the man that we knew as Frank Foster was still very much there. Our friendship in part led to many things, but in part was how we came to acquire the papers here at Duke. Indeed, Frank has been a very big supporter of me as an individual, as a bass player, and then certainly as a director of the jazz program here at Duke. When we decided that we wanted to build a jazz archive, you know, there were several people's names who floated, but certainly his name was among the first. And I do believe it's because we stayed in constant communication, and I was perpetually reaching out to him to come and work with our students, to be a presence here for our students and for our program. And even with my professional big band, when I decided that I wanted to lead a professional big band, of course, I reached out to him and we had many conversations about it. And in fact, when I was getting it together to give a debut concert, he said, I want to be there. So he came on down and rehearsed the band for 3 days before that concert, just because he wanted to be here to support what we were doing. So indeed, I believe that the relationship I had with him certainly helped us acquire his papers and be able to honor his legacy forever. We're still going through boxes, but there are many handwritten manuscripts and almost all of his arrangements. And as I'm going through, I'm finding letters that, you know, he's written to people, and there are scratches and some sketches of arrangements. As we go through, we like to try to catalog things and organize it so we know what we have and make it available through the archive. So the jury's still out on how much there actually will be in the Frank Foster section of our archive. The history of big bands is a well-established tradition at Duke, and one way that we want to offer our contribution to people keeping the music alive is to archive it and house it in a place where it can be accessed. There are so many things that make Frank Foster's legacy. I believe that a good way to sum his life's work is just about the love of the music. His legacy is that whenever you're around him or we hear people talk about him, he inspires so much love and warmth and understanding for the music, and is truly an inspiration. I think of many times when we talked to each other or we talked about other people, and you can always tell that his conversation is from the most sincere place that a human can muster. He was as sincere a person as you'd ever want to meet, and his genuine love for the music carried through in everything he did. As a matter of fact, he was still doing arrangements in the hospital. Ms. Foster and I kept in somewhat regular touch while he was in the hospital. And in recent months, he had fallen and gotten intensive care. But before that, he had a computer, the tape players here, the CD players here. So he's still trying to write arrangements. And in fact, there were several things that we had talked about. He was writing a bass feature for me because he said that he was so moved by our recording his music. He did some charts just for my band. And he was so moved by us doing that, he said, well, I'm going to write something for you, man. You're going to keep these cats playing. I'm going to write something for you. So I know that he was still working on that till as long as he was able to.
Thank you. My name is Brian Grady, and I'm a documentary filmmaker. I've been focused on jazz musicians and jazz as a culture for the past, I guess, 7 or 8 years, and done a number of shorts that were sort of tributes to some jazz musicians that I felt deserved some recognition. They had garnered some recognition in their younger days, but as they got older, were sort of forgotten as music styles changed. And the way I met Frank Foster was through a good friend of mine, Benny Powell, who sat in the Count Basie band at the same time that Frank was in it in the 50s. And I had Mr. Powell, who passed away just a little over a year ago, had hired me to document some of his activities. And then we started working on a sort of biography of him. And he would introduce me to his musician friends. And through him, I met Frank West and Randy Weston, TK Blue, and some other people that I've had the pleasure of working with over the last couple of years. So that's how I met Frank. And longtime partner with Frank Foster, bass player Earl May. I had done a piece about Earl, who I also was lucky enough to become friends with before he passed away back in 2008. And when he had gone, I had a lot of footage of him. And so a lot of my work ends up being shown at, unfortunately, at memorial services. And Frank Foster's wife, Cecilia Foster, who's been his business manager and wife for about 50 years, called me after she saw this piece I did on Earl May and said, "I would so much prefer Frank see your work about him completed before he passes away." And so she asked me if the two of us worked on getting some funding, if I would do my thing about Frank Foster. And so I immediately said yes. She gave me a list of about, I don't know, about 30 people that she said, some of these people will be in the film and tell their story about Frank. Other people will want to help in some other way. They'll have ideas. And hopefully some of the people on the list will be interested in helping us fund it. But this was going to be a much bigger, much more ambitious project than the ones I had done in the past. I think the longest film I had made was probably about 18 minutes. I'm planning on creating an hour-long film and licensing a lot of photographs and a lot of music, which was not something I had necessarily gotten involved in earlier because of the venues of where I showed my work. So my plan was basically I'll come up with a 10-minute demo of what it'll look like and what it'll sound like. And then I will take this list that Cecilia provided me with, and I would solicit partnerships with some of their friends who supported them over the years. Unfortunately, this was 2008, and I embarked on this little journey around the same time that the stock market crashed and the housing bubble exploded, and all the rich friends were no longer as rich as they used to be. So it was a tough time. It was a tough time doing the fundraising. And maybe I was a bit naive and thought that would be a little easier than it really was. But I got the 10-minute piece done. I distributed that and went into focusing on the sort of publicity and fundraising. And that is a full-time job in itself. So I worked on that for a year and a half. And in the meantime, when you're making a documentary film, something happens, you need to film it. You don't wait for some, you know, you don't say, I'm not going to film that concert unless somebody gives me X amount to cover my expenses. So I continued working on the film. So I basically ended up spending nearly all my money and got to a point where I just actually could not continue with having to pay the mortgage or the rent. And I'm a family guy as well. So basically, I decided to keep on working on the film and keep on editing. And I ended up creating a 55-minute piece, which was good. And I did screen it at a couple of venues. Got a very good reaction from jazz fans. But I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't happy with the film. So I did a little nosing around copyright law. And through a friend of mine, I discovered a little-known change that was made in the copyright law that allows for an artist or an author cancel all contracts on a piece of work, like a song or a book or whatever they've written, whatever they've created, 56 years from the date of the original publishing, an author can cancel all agreements that they made. Now, what happens with the musicians, particularly African-American musicians in the 1950s, working for primarily white businessmen, didn't necessarily get good contracts when they wrote a song. And young artists new to the Count Basie band, not necessarily the greatest business decisions are made. So basically what happened was Frank signed some contracts. He did receive royalties for his songs, but nothing like, oh, I feel that he deserved. So found out about this law. Also knew that Frank had taught at Rutgers University in the 70s and had a friend in the business school there. And I worked my way through that school to the intellectual property department in the law school. And I convinced them at the law school at Rutgers to take on Frank Foster's reclamation of his songs from 1956 through, I think they're working on 1956 through 1960 right now. And Shiny Stockings, the title song of my film, is one of those songs. It was written in 1956. In 2012, Frank's heirs will be able to republish that under their own label and receive 100% of future royalties, where his percentage on his old contracts was significantly less than that. So this is the sort of thing that was really a payoff for me. I wanted to find some way of giving back to these musicians who really dedicated their life to their craft. They created something that I love. I get to consume it daily for free. And a lot of their names are just completely forgotten. So making this film basically created not only a financial legacy, but hopefully if I can get the film out there and get it well distributed, I hope to get Frank Foster and his big band, the Loud Minority Big Band, which is still in existence, the recognition that they deserve. So this project, while I have one version of it done, I'm not satisfied with it. And I'm still going to finish the film one way or the other. And whether it gets on PBS or it goes direct to distribution on DVD, one way or the other, it's going to get done. You know, it's kind of difficult, something that you put a couple of years of your life into, and then someone who you became close friends with and passes away, and it's the person that you really hope to finish their life story before their life was over. But he did see the hour-long version of it that I created. He liked it very much. But my plan is to continue and one way or the other get this film done by January 1st.
Good evening. I'm Fran Robinson, Director of Public Relations at Central State University. Central State University, first of all, located in Wilberforce, Ohio, is a nationally recognized academic institution located sort of in the suburbs right outside of Xenia. We are a historically black college founded in 1887. We are coming up on our 125th anniversary And as a part of the 125th anniversary, during the homecoming weekend, Central State University will celebrate with an evening concert featuring the music of the Count Basie Orchestra. And for your listeners that are familiar with the Count Basie Orchestra, you are also familiar with one of the former directors of that orchestra, Mr. Frank Foster. Mr. Foster passed away recently, and as a tribute to his music and his work with the Count Basie Orchestra, the university here at Central State, we've decided that we are going to develop a scholarship in jazz studies in honor of Mr. Foster. And so we decided to bring in the Count Basie Orchestra. They will perform at the Victoria Theater on Saturday, October the 15th at 8 p.m. If you look into the background information, it might say that Mr. Foster attended Wilberforce University. Well, back in the early 40s and the mid-40s when he attended, the two universities were just one. And so after 1949, they split, and that's when Central State University was founded. But we certainly consider Frank Foster as an alum. He was an accomplished musician. His legacy will live on and on. And we're so proud and excited to be able to, A, set up a scholarship in his name for students that are interested in pursuing jazz studies, and also to be able to have this great concert to come to the Dayton area.
You've been listening to Frank Foster, Cincinnati Jazz Icon. You can find a link to Frank Foster, his archives, the film by Brian Grady, and tickets for the Central State Basie Concert at WVXU.org. Technical support from Kevin Rowinski and Rick Andrus. I'm producer and host Lee Hay.